Welcome, Dan. It's so good to see you again. Dan Julian from Canada. You're in Ontario, aren't you?
I'm in Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa, sorry.
Nation's capital. It's Ontario is the province, but Ottawa is the main city. And yeah, absolutely.
And Dan, you are the, how would you say, CEO, medical director or of Dan Aesthetics Medical.
Yeah, I would say I'm medical director. CEO sounds great to me. I don't know how my wife feels. She's co-CEO, so.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you some stuff on that as well, because I'm in a similar position with Miranda. And, it's interesting to hear other couples and how you guys are doing. You're clearly doing very, very well. So I'd like to get some tips on you on that side of things as well. I just re-listened to actually the live you did with Miranda, and I thought how perfect it is, because this year a lot of what I've been trying to work on myself is around what you actually were teaching us in the last live. And it was such a powerful live for me to listen to that, as you know, I've used some of what you said in terms of teaching my kids new things and trying to take that mentality that you shared that you learned on your journey to becoming a professional squash player that you then also then transitioned into aesthetics and took those lessons with you. I think they're so powerful. And I'd love to see if we can relate those straight back to what is currently blocking many clinicians in their journey, because we're always continuously up against our own internal battles, mindset things, and clinical is one of the scariest things, you know, risks, complications, patient complaints. And you can clearly apply the same thing that you learned in your squash journey
talk about this stuff. I'm like getting chills thinking about it, because this is exactly how I approach every day with regards to either medical aesthetics, trying to better myself as a person with my family. And it just takes the weight off my shoulders. It just keeps everything light. I approach things a little bit differently, but it's because of what I've learned through that journey and everything that's applied. And it's funny, because I remember when you told me how, you know, you applied that with your children, it reminded me, oh my gosh, yeah, you know, right? I need to do this more of this implementation with my family, because it can't just all be about, you know, business or my journey or whatever. It's got to be encapsulating everything. And that's what I try and do. And I think a lot of times medical aesthetics providers kind of get in their own head, like you said, their ego gets in the way, or there's a lot of self-doubt. And this mindset can really help you just get out of there. And they all have the tools to do it. I mean, if you went to med school, there's a lot of discipline there, and you can definitely use that for your application process.
I was thinking there's a difference between some goals and the types of goals that you were setting, though. So, and the difference is in this word transformation. So the goals that you were setting, both to become the face of medical aesthetics in Canada, but also in your other journeys that you've been on, are goals that are transformational. So they're not like, I would like to make another 3 videos a week on YouTube, which is great, but that's not actually a transformational goal. It's more volume of the same. And that's what I loved about the goals that you were setting. And you talked a lot about why you chose to set really big goals. I wonder if you could touch on a little bit around what led you to discover and why you think big goals are more important or so fundamental, really, rather than just additional goals, if you know what I mean.
I think what happened was, during that process of this journey of squash, trying to figure it out, I also always wanted to have my own business. And I think that was one of the reasons actually why I took this journey, a 3-year journey to try and be the best squash player in Ottawa. It was because since I was 20 years old, I've always wanted to have my own business, and I couldn't figure it out. So I had multiple little jobs on the side. I was doing well, but never really could find a business as a nurse practitioner. And at the time, whenever I decided to go into squash, I read up on this guy named Grant Cardone, and, you know, he's just a 10X guy. And then at the same time, I was also listening to a lot of Gary Vaynerchuk, and I was just getting a lot of, you know, positive insight from them. And at that time, I also was dabbling into sports psychology, and somehow all these connections just kind of amalgamated into one. And while I was doing this squash journey, I figured out how I could be a nurse practitioner and do medical aesthetics on my own, and things just exploded. So first of all, it taught me that whenever I was looking to play squash, not only did I want to do well in squash, but I wanted to be the best. Having this goal of saying, like, number one in Ottawa would allow me to get there a little closer, right? So I understand that in Ottawa, there's a ton of squash players and they're all really good. They've been playing since they were six and they play 6 days a week. I was like, I don't know, 33 or 34 whenever I started, or starting into the route of taking it seriously. So I knew that I would have to think outside the box. Taking lessons, having practices, we're going to get you so far. But, you know, I was kind of still blowing up on court a little bit and I would get down on myself if there was a ref that wasn't calling something or if there was a player who was cheating or if I was worried about who's watching the audience. All these things were just flowing through my mind instead of just focusing on the ball and the game. So that's where sports psychology helped out. And Grant Cardone's approach was basically saying, listen, whatever your goal is, make it 10 times bigger, make it grandiose. So I said, okay, instead of trying to say like realistically, even though I could probably be maybe top 50 in Ottawa, just go for number one, see what happens. So as I got closer to 50, I realized, man, I'm hitting this serious wall and it's because I need to break down those boundaries. So sports psychology really helped me get to that next level. I think I got like top 20 or something like that, which would have never happened. It would have never happened. I'm telling you right now, if I wouldn't have tried to aim for the top, I maybe would have gotten to 50 and I would have been really happy with that. But it made me appreciate things on a different level. So I applied that in medical aesthetics. I said, listen, I'm going to try and be the face for Canada. I feel that I'm lucky that I take care of myself. I look the part and I'm also in nation's capital. I could be the face of Canada. Why not? And doing so, I kind of had this feeling that I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew that I would probably hit multiple targets or goals on the way there, which I had no idea what they would be. But I just knew that if I trusted in myself and trusted the process of the discipline and everything else, having this grandiose or this almost untouchable vision or plan or goal, that I would be hitting multiple targets on the way.
Mm-hmm. So there's something really interesting baked into all of that thinking, which is, I think for me personally, one of the things that stopped me setting goals that I should have set was a fear that of judgment, even by myself, if I didn't attain those goals. So the goal becomes a judge. And there's something in the way you've packaged goals that has freed you from that. How come you're not afraid of, it sounds to me like you're not afraid of not hitting the goal, but you are pursuing it as truthfully as you possibly can. You're really going for it, but you're not afraid of not hitting it.
I think that the reason why that happened was through squash, I didn't understand how I could so I thought it was going to be linear growth. So I was already a decent squash player. I thought, my gosh, if I actually apply myself, all my trainings, all my workouts, all my nutrition, everything plus lessons, practice every day, it's just going to be linear growth. But on the way, there was a lot of losses. And then I'd occasionally win and then lose and then win. And then I'd lose to people who I, you know, used to beat before even taking lessons. And then again, this is where I was, you know, getting caught up in my head. And I wasn't really trusting myself. And my coach was the person who I would, you know, ask. I said, you know, am I getting any better? She's like, absolutely. She's like, you just have to trust the process. Eventually, it's all going to click, but you have to keep at it and keep doing what you're doing, which is you're practicing every day. Everything's tailored towards it. Eventually, it all just clicks. And I didn't, you know, deep down, I didn't believe what she was saying because I didn't feel like I was getting that much better. But not all of a sudden, one day, it just clicked. I was able to surpass all these people. I knew how to beat them. I had more confidence on my shots in the court and I wasn't thinking as much. It was just it was more automatic at that point. So I think that really helped me. That helped me understand that I don't know all the answers, but I understand that if I trust the process and if I put in the work and I put in the discipline and if I can find a way to make medical aesthetics work for me and if I can understand it at my basic level, then it will work. I just have to trust the process and I have to put in the work. And eventually it's all going to click. And I've had hit multiple goals on the way to my, you know, goal of being top in Canada. I'm not there yet, but there have been so many doors that have been opened, which I would have never expected. Mm-hmm.
So tell me how it affects you on a day-to-day basis, having such a big goal, because that could be a pressure or it could be something that makes things easier. How does it affect you having such a big goal on a, you know, on a regular Monday when you wake up?
Well, I mean, to have these goals, there are pros and cons with it. But having the big goals helps you deal with some of the negativity that comes with it, right? So there's pros and cons with it. So the pros are definitely having a routine And that's waking up and having a little journal. Actually, this is something very similar like this. I wake up and I just write something in the morning what I plan on doing that day, which is I've got to wake up, I've got to exercise, I've got to post something on Instagram today, or it's going to be about YouTube or whatever. And then I might do a question and answer period. And then I also want to make sure I spend a little time with my kids. So that's going to be like my goals for today. Then after that, I have like another goal session, which is going to be reminding myself. And I actually write it in like as if it's already happened. I am the face of Canada. I have 100 million subscribers on YouTube. I have 1 million subscribers on Patreon. And when people think of medical aesthetics in Canada, they think of me. And on top of that, I still have an amazing relationship with my family. That's my big goal. So that kind of sets the tone for the day. And it keeps me in check, because if I don't write those out, then I kind of feel like most of the time whenever I have spare time, I'm just dialing on my phone or I'm scrolling. I'm just wasting time. But if I have these set things in mind, it sets the tone for the day that I'm here for a reason. Those are my big goals. And my small goals sets the tone for making sure that I hit certain targets today, so I'm not wasting my time. Mm-hmm. That's the positivity with regards to having these big goals. And this is how I have to achieve it. Otherwise, I can say I have these goals, but if I don't have anything as a discipline and process, if there's nothing set every day, for me, it just won't happen. And then the negative stuff is just basically having to deal with maybe some little local hate from some competition. But in the end, it doesn't bother me, because I don't have their goals. Their goals are usually trying to be the face of whatever city they're in, or the big fish in that pond. And I'm trying to be the face of Canada. So I'm more inclined to help them out. I'm like, if you end up becoming huge in Ottawa, amazing, because I know that bigger things are going to happen for me.
Absolutely. So that it's a brilliant concept, which I also discovered recently, which is you can make decisions today based on where you're going to be, not where you've come from. So a lot of people make decisions based on the past. They'll say, you know, in the past I was this good, so therefore I shouldn't. They'll set a goal that's almost in tune with where they are now, but a bit louder, but a bit more of the same. Whereas what you're saying is you get in touch with this a huge version of yourself that's in the future, and you use that to make decisions and to interpret your current day. So you're interpreting the local person who feels a bit under threat as in a wildly different way than what they probably think. They probably think you're kind of thinking of them and shoulder to shoulder, but you're really not. You're like, you're 5 years ahead. I think it's such a beautiful idea. It's that, because the other thing is it makes more meaning for the small tasks that you're doing as well. So that one, the things that you do that are in alignment with that big goal mean more, because they're not just another Instagram post. It's something that you're doing on the step to something that really excites you. So it's such a good idea, which I hope lots of people take things from. And the other thing you said, which I really love, is people have different goals. So I know we've touched on competition in the past, but it's worth thinking that although we maybe compete in some ways for attention, we're actually not competing often in the way that people think, because your goals are very unique and my goals are very unique. And although we may be in the same space, we're not competing for the same thing. And it's different to squash, because there are multiple different awards you can win, because you just make things that you want to achieve and make them your goal. It makes it much more, I don't know, I feel it's a much freer idea than thinking we're all competing for the same thing.
Yeah, no, you got to get out of that. I wish, and I think it's just because I actually can't state why people do that, but I definitely know that in businesses, you know, it's almost direct competition, and they feel, and I've spoken to a lot of business colleagues who are in medical aesthetics in Ottawa before I got into medical aesthetics, and I would hear them like, see that person over there? That's competition. They have a clinic over here. I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot of deep down, like this almost insecurity of, you know, I have to beat everyone. And if one of my clients or a few of my clients go over there and I see that on Instagram or whatever, like that irks them, where that's the problem with not having big enough goals. I find that it just contains you and it makes you bitter. Yeah. I try and do whatever I can to make sure that I try and keep it as light as possible, and making sure that whoever I can connect with, it's always on a positive term. And it sounds flighty, but this approach really just helps me stay that route. It's I don't have any hate or animosity, or, you know, I really encourage everyone. And even chain clinics, which, you know, it's completely opposite from us. And I see a lot of people who, you know, bash on chain clinics saying like, look at these big lips and look at what they're doing. It's terrible. And they charge less and they're charging not enough and they're bringing the standard down. For me, just learn from them. You know, everyone has a different approach. Everyone is here trying to make it on their own. Everyone's trying to make their business work for them. And I have a chain clinic that's right next to us. And I actually refer a lot of clients over there because I understand that their clients are going to come over and they may already have lips that are too big and they're going to ask for more lip filler. And I'll take my time to explain to them why maybe I should even dissolve or maybe balance something else. But for them, it's, you know, it's my body. I'm allowed to do whatever I want. And in that case, what am I going to do? I could say, listen, there's a clinic over there. If that's your route, at least you're going to have a service done by a medical provider. But it's not my approach. It's just a different approach. So people love to bash on that. I don't bash on them. I kind of encourage them, like, good for them. If they have a clinic that supports people who can afford certain things but can't afford everything, maybe something positive will happen in the future as a result. I'm not sure. But for me, as long as I'm trying to keep everything light, keeping everything positive and encouraging everyone, it always seems to work out.
Absolutely. And once again, you have very unique goals. So you're not actually, you're not trying to become a chain clinic. So they're a different beast. So there is no reason to worry about it because you're aiming for a very different thing.
Absolutely.
I think that only works with big goals though, because if you just wanted to be like, you know, as you said, the best known practitioner in your street and there's a chain clinic, that's a much harder, it's harder because it's too close. So the big goals fit in with making that clearer. The other thing I thought might be interesting to discuss is how have these big goals played a role in you overcoming obstacles that all clinicians face, you know, to do with maybe a new procedure that you tried to learn? Can you think back to how it maybe has helped you with something that you might have been put off doing practically in terms of a clinical skill that you wouldn't have done if you hadn't had a very big reason to do it?
What I can say with that is I'm not sure if it's the goal, but it definitely was part of the process. Whenever I first got into medical aesthetics, I actually didn't touch anyone with a syringe for about 6 months into understanding the anatomy. So for me, it was all doing a ton of education before, where everyone else does it a little differently here. And I think this is why a lot of people get insecure whenever they start getting into medical aesthetics, because they'll go take a course. They hear about this course. They're like, oh, yeah, you can get certified in like a weekend. So they go take a course over the weekend. And then after that, they haven't purchased any of the products, so nothing really happens until they take the next course. And then the next course is just another weekend. And then they're kind of like, oh my gosh, now I've got to do this independently. And they get, there's a lot of insecurity around there because of the fact that even though they've learned about it, they haven't memorized it. And it's not like the back of their hand. So for me, that was my approach. My approach was, okay, if I want to be the face of Canada, I can't just focus on lifts. I'm going to have to be known as the guy who does dermal fillers very well, but all over the face very well. And that means I'm going to have to understand the anatomy extremely well. And I need to know this thing like the back of my hand. So for me, I basically studied my butt off, similarly to how I took that approach with sports psychology whenever I was learning. That was something that I had to learn on my own. I couldn't have learned that through taking lessons, coaches, you know, I had to look at a different aspect. And medical aesthetics, I knew that I had to understand the anatomy a little differently. So I need not only understand where the arteries were, but the location, the depth. I also really want to understand what's happening with the fat pads. Is it possible that the mass is shrinking? What's happening with a muscle? What happens with the bone? How does the face morph as we age? And then after that, whenever I really felt like I had that and I was writing it down, I would give myself little essays like every week, be like, hey, where's the artery depth here today? And as soon as I had that down, that's whenever I started going into medical aesthetics. And I remember taking my first course and the guy who was teaching is like, are you sure you've never done this before? I was like, yeah. He's like, you know so much about the anatomy. And I was like, well, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to be the face of Canada. And he started laughing. So I ended up taking that really seriously. And then as a result, it gave me so much more confidence right away. As soon as I started learning how people do certain techniques, such as, let's say, dermal fillers for the forehead, right? A lot of people are like, well, you can't do that because you've only been doing it for like 3 months, like actually in field practice. Where I was like, but I understand the anatomy and understand how, you know, I can avoid this complication. And I actually know two different ways to avoid it. So how long do you have to B, how long do you have to be in this field before you're allowed doing this, right? If you understand the anatomy. And this is where, for me, understanding the anatomy was essential. Then after that, it was looking at how people are doing it, which ways I felt worked for me, right? There's some people who do different codes and some people do different, you know, 8-7 point lift techniques. And there's some people who just look at the face and prefer to kind of act almost like a sculpture. And that was more my approach. So as soon as I could dive into that and connect with that, that gave me the confidence to say, okay, I can take my anatomy background, I can use my artistic expression, this is someone who I could relate to. And then after that, I try it on my own. Mm-hmm. Try it on my own a few times. If it works, great. I'm actually going to post about it, tell people it works. If it doesn't work, I'm going to try something else.
So I love that, because your first goal was to master the anatomy. And for me, that's very clear thinking, and it was a towards motivator. A lot of people get into the cycle of learning in order to avoid doing. It's almost like I'll keep training because that way I put off actually doing things. But it becomes scattergun and there's no finite end to it. So what I love what you did there is you had a goal to master anatomy before you moved on. So it was a strategic goal that you recognized as complete. And then you moved on to the next stage, having had it validated in your training, because the trainer. So this is the development of capability and confidence that through a very strategic and intentional process, rather than I'll just immerse myself and do everything. It's more like, these are the steps, and when I get to that step, I'm going to then take the next step. But having that connected with this long term goal is such a clear and brilliant way of thinking about it, which is. I hope everyone who listens to this gets that. That's going to take you so much further than just doing the next course that comes around the corner, because you knew exactly what you were learning and why, and was connected to this huge goal right from the start. It's such a good way of thinking about it.
I appreciate that. And I think the reason why that happened is because, you know, throughout these journeys, you're reading about motivation, self-mastery, and all these things, 10,000 hours to do anything right before you become a master. But I always look at it, you know, I kind of bring it back to the sports aspect, which is, listen, my wife and I just took up tennis during COVID. I didn't know anything about tennis before, but people assumed I'd be great because I play squash. Well, it's completely different grip. It's all topspin, whereas squash is cutting. Everything's different. But I knew that I wanted to learn this. And most people's approach will be like, okay, well, I'll just go in and practice a little bit, take maybe even a couple lessons if they're lucky. But most people go into sports and they'll try and do it on their own for a while. And then only then, if they're serious about it, they'll take lessons. Where my approach is completely different. It's get the foundations at the beginning. Learn the techniques at the beginning and have them down. Because afterwards, the sooner you can get that, then you're going to basically eliminate all your bad habits. Once you have all the techniques and the foundations down, then you can just practice those later on instead of just practicing things that you don't know what you're doing. And I do feel that that was my approach with medical aesthetics. If I can have these essential techniques or boundaries down first, then I can go ahead and feel confident practicing these techniques because I have the anatomy down. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're going in and learning on the fly, then your self-confidence is never going to show up because until it may be taking you 10,000 hours or longer. And because you're kind of creating all these errors, unnecessary errors on the way up, when you can kind of almost mitigate them right off the bat by just taking a different approach.
Mm-hmm. And then it's the same idea I think we've already touched on, but you're interpreting that learning so that because you know you're going to inject as soon as you feel confident enough. It's not just, it's not a hobby. Like, it's very, very strategic that when I've got the anatomy clear, I will be confident to do that procedure that other people think is dangerous, because I'm spending the time getting the foundations absolutely crystal clear, and then trusting that, because there's a huge amount of self-trust to actually then take that information and make a decision on it. I think you said this also in Miranda's live, that you said something about trusting yourself to have the skills, competence, and there was one other word you used, I can't remember, but it was a very good summary of what I think a good clinician is actually, that's what clinicians are actually programmed to do, which is make an assessment based on a complex situation.
The knowledge, skill, and judgment.
That's it.
That's right.
That's it. So tell me about the judgment side of things. Is this something, how did you develop that confidence to trust your judgment?
The judgment it's exactly what we said. As soon as I felt that I was ready to inject the face, because I had the knowledge, skill, and judgment, I could make the decision on treating things that people would be less inclined to do, right? So I remember whenever I first started, I was doing liquid rhinoplasties, I was doing forehead, I was doing upper eyelid fillers, and people were like, I'm not touching that. I have no idea why you feel that you can be doing that. You've only been doing this for so long. But that's it. The judgment comes, your judgment is going to come based on your self-confidence and not, you know, self-confidence where I'm just motivating myself, pumping myself up. If the confidence is there based on what I've learned in the past and how to mitigate risk and also how to see potential complications and how to fix it if there's ever an issue. And also having confidence to tell clients about all of these things.
Yeah.
If you can explain it to a client the way that you can internalize it yourself, where both of you are on the same page, then we're good to go. So this is,
I think it's such an important thing. I think a lot of injectors worry that they should just feel confident to do a procedure. And if they don't feel confident, then they don't do it. But what you're describing is a process by which you learn the foundations so well that it becomes more and more tangible. And you learn it with that procedure in mind. So when you're not just memorizing stuff for no reason. And that builds an inner confidence as it becomes clearer and clearer in your head. And that then gives you the confidence to step into that arena. But it's a very strategic bottom-up approach. And as you said, it was very well worth saying, it's not about upping your courage. You're not just kind of, as you say, like high-fiving yourself and saying, you can do it, Dan. It's much more around finding out what's missing and filling in the gaps until that you naturally reach a time when you actually do feel safe to do it.
100%. I think a lot of people kind of miss that about me. So I think some people think it's all about like rah, rah, rah. And it's, I mean, I definitely, you know, I'm very positive, but at the same time, yeah, there's a reason why I feel that calm.
Well, strategic. I think that's the thing that I love about your way of thinking is it's very, very strategic and methodical. It isn't just about the emotions, although that's, you have to have that, you got emotional awareness about when you're not to beat yourself up or when things don't go exactly according to plan, but you're feeding that energy back in to build your floor almost. I think it's going to be so useful for people to understand that. One of the things that I often see aesthetic practitioners do is declare that they simply will not touch a certain procedure because it's too high risk. And I try and push in the other direction, which is exactly what you've done, which is break down why it's high risk. Because what you're saying is there's something missing in my understanding that makes me feel uncertain. If you think about what risk is, it's that you can't manage a particular uncertainty. And you might reach a point where you can manage all the uncertainties that you can and you still feel like it's not worth the benefit. But that most people are not saying that. They're actually saying, I feel scared to do this procedure. And what you're saying is you might have felt that way, but if you did enough work in the background and thought through in enough detail, then your level of confidence might increase to the point where you can do that procedure. And also you'll be really good at it because you've not just decided to do it. You've actually built as much information as possible to actually give you that confidence.
100%. Even whenever we have other physicians or anyway, nurses shadowing us, you know, I've had physicians who've literally posted on their Instagram, why would top three things I would never do as a medical aesthetics provider? And one of them was something like liquid rhinoplasty. And then they're coming in to shadow me and I explain to them how you can mitigate risk, how it's almost, you know, with this technique, you can't plug an artery. There's not enough filler. And at the same time, you can do things to mitigate it and minute it. And we end up doing two liquid rhinoplasties that day. One of them changed this person's life. She was crying because her nose had been bugging her for so long. And at that point, it changed for her because it was a combination of the aspect of her seeing what this procedure can do for a client in such a short period of time and also understanding how to mitigate risk and understanding the anatomy. And at that point for her, that's what she needed. She just needed to hear and understand how to not have these complications. And if you can understand that, then you can go in and do this procedure easily.
Yep. It's all the hard work you put in at the beginning. I think that's also, I was thinking about one of the things actually directly sparked by your conversation with Miranda, because I've been looking for ways to teach my kids things and expose them to failure so that they get better at managing those emotions. And my oldest one is a he's extremely upset when it doesn't go his own way. But it's funny because he memorizes some of the stuff I teach him, but his behavior is still not yet in alignment. But I know that will click one day; he'll suddenly get it.
Yeah.
which we're learning the guitar at the moment, and it's the painful process of just getting your fingers to get on the chord and trying to keep them on track with that is hard. But you can see that what we're basically doing is putting the building blocks in. That eventually, and we've had a moment like this already where they suddenly thought, oh, I can see it's all actually working as one unit. And it's a great, I've never heard anyone say that quite so clearly about medical aesthetics, because actually the commercial driver, particularly in the UK, is that you learn how to inject quite quickly. And anatomy, actually, a lot of the anatomy is kind of location specific, but you had this approach of doing the whole face all at once, which then put you in a, it must have been quite a challenge training you in those early days. If you put so much effort in, and then suddenly you may well have had known more than the trainer, I don't know, because it's an unusual way of doing it. But you did it. This foundation building block approach is excellent. I'm going to find somewhere to use that more in my life as well, because I think it's so much easier when you've got the long term.
The when it comes to understanding. It's tough. We're in as parents, especially, right? Because I definitely feel like it's definitely okay to learn how to lose. But at the same time, I definitely feel that there's a benefit of the more wins that you have, build confidence, right? So I'm trying to instill a lot of positivity. If they're learning anything, it's like very good. And if they're having concerns with that, it's like, okay, so tell me about the concerns. Let's write it down. Let's think about it. But anytime there's a win, it's a big win. And I want them to know that. I definitely feel that. And I feel that I think medical aesthetics providers, especially physicians, I'm not sure what it is, physicians, whoever's listening, if you've never done anything in sports and you're like, I can't really relate. Well, you should be able to relate with how much studying you've done, because when it comes down to any physician that I know, usually you're the top of your class most of your life. And at the same time, how did you get there? You had to have some type of discipline to study harder and longer than anyone else. It's the only way you end up getting to medical school. It's through that discipline. And that's the reason why you became successful, is you had some type of established routine of discipline of putting more time in than others in order to get top grades. This is essentially, how you build confidence is doing the exact same thing in medical aesthetics. Put in that time, do maybe an hour a day. That's what I was doing. Everyone was sleeping at night. Whenever I put the kids down, Michelle goes down early, and I was studying at night. I think I'd study from like 10:30 till like midnight or 12:30 or something like that. That was my time to study. It was the only time during the day to do it. I had four other jobs during that time. So that's the way to do it. That's honestly the secret, is just applying what you've done in order to become successful as a physician and putting that knowledge into one thing that you're extremely focused in. And if you are into medical aesthetics, do it. The bonus for me is that I love it. And I think that that's, a lot of people do this because they enjoy the money. And I know there's a lot of conversation about that. It's like, you got to love it, but you really do. Like, I think that's the reason why, part of my local competition, they're happy for me, but it also drives them crazy to see how happy I am because I love it. It's almost effortless for me because I have this crazy goal. I'm hitting targets on the way, and I really do enjoy the process. You've got to love it.
Yeah. So this is, you're happy because you're in alignment with something that really matters to you. And this is actually almost more important than anything, that is that you can actually get happy now by having a big goal and then making sure that you're in alignment with it. And it's something I've only realized that this year. I say it like I've always known. And I'm starting to use it with my staff as well. Like, I want to see if someone looks bored in a meeting, it means that they don't think that meeting is relevant to their goals. And that's not their fault. That's actually the structure of our business. And I need to figure out what their goals are, make sure that they stay in alignment, and then people get happier today. So this setting big goals is not actually necessarily always about achieving them, but it does point you in a particular direction, and it enables you to be happy straight away. I think that's such a useful idea. I mean, it's more than useful. Like, it's the secret to happiness to be in alignment with important goals that have a purpose behind them.
That's brilliant what you just said with regards to chatting with your colleagues and or people who work with you to figure out what their goals are, because that's so those two people I said helped me, who were influential with who I was reading, Grant Cardone and Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary Vaynerchuk right now, he's very much in tune with that. He's very much in tune with being positive and at the same time understanding that he has a massive team working with him, but he says he gets the most out of people whenever you can have like a connection with them, figuring out what their goals are. So he'll say, listen, if people want to leave, he's totally okay with people leaving. But at the same time, he would like to know what their goals are. If they are to, you know, build their own brand one day, amazing. How can he help them get there? And in the end, it takes pressure off of them. He feels like that it's more open. It's a more open space. People are happy. They come into work. They just feel like they can talk to him about anything. And in the end, he just kind of sees life as this big, you know, happy bubble where instead of, you know, focusing on business as being competition and challenging and stressful, he just sees it as, you know, it's just a part of life. And if we can help each other on the way, let's do it. So he's a very interesting dude right now. And I'm listening to a lot of what he has to say. And what you just mentioned was bang on with it.
Yeah, I've fallen out of his bubble recently. He was very influential with me back in 2015, 16. And then I don't know what happened. I've just, you know, you can slip out of these bubbles. So I'll listen to some more of his stuff. I'm interested in, so how, do you employ people? You must employ people now already.
You know what? So it's Michelle and I still at the clinic. So day to day, I'm the injector. Michelle does all the business.
Right.
So she runs all the numbers in the background. She's, you know, almost admin or whatever. She's the front line, but there's still only her and I. So right now we're in this position where we're growing. We definitely need to employ other people, and because whenever we're going to all these conferences, the place is shut down and we need to make sure that, you know, this place is self-sustaining. But, you know, as I mentioned, with regards to hitting different targets on the way up, one of the things is that I grew this Patreon account, and Patreon is another side of business, but it's completely unrelated in the sense that now this Patreon is dedicated to injectors, where the clinic is dedicated to people who come to see me for injections. So we have two different businesses, and I was never expecting that. So now I'm incorporated twice all of a sudden, and I have to figure out where I want to keep my focus. Do I want to focus more towards, you know, growing my Patreon? Because there's the benefit of that is, you know, I can do that from the comfort of anywhere. And also I can target absolutely anyone in the world who's in medical aesthetics. Whereas if I'm, you know, focusing on the business is doing very well and we're at a point of expansion, but then I have to deal with the expansion issues of having to deal with people coming in, them leaving, not showing up, reception, all these things. But it's, you know, initially my goal was to likely have a franchise and grow this up. So it's not a problem. It's just that it's something that we have to focus on. And Michelle and I both love going to work where it's just the two of us right now. Mm-hmm. We're also still in this kind of like honeymoon phase in the sense because our business only opened up November 2021. So it's still pretty new. It's been a year and a half. And we still love going to work. We still love having this kind of one-to-one thing where we still walk in every day and we're like, this is ours. This is pretty awesome. And we're growing this. But whenever we start introducing other people, then that's going to slowly start chipping away at that. Yeah. So we understand we are growing. In the end, I'm going to do both. I'm going to grow both my Patreon and this business. And wherever I lean onto one or the other will happen in the future. I'm not sure where.
Yeah. That's essentially, I think it's also one of the, I'm sure you'll come up with a great answer, but it's, you have to be strategic with those decisions, not just say yes to all the opportunities. Cause I've certainly made that mistake many times of saying yes to things that were out of alignment. And then you end up committed to something that you don't really enjoy. Or the unintended addition, like you've already anticipated that having staff will be a different kettle of fish to just managing it with a very intimate setup. So tell me a little bit about like, how do your goals overlap with Michelle? Because that's one of the things that I've had to learn also with Miranda is that we have to somehow figure out how we both get what we want from this. And I know this is true for all injectors. We all have, even if your partner's not involved with the business can become intrusive into your relationship. How do you manage that dynamic with Michelle?
Luckily, we've been pretty much on par with everything. So there hasn't been really too much of a discussion with regards to her having a different goal or vision than I do or what I have. But it's, you know, to be honest, the answer is I don't really know. We haven't really had this conversation yet. We're just still growing and things are happening so fast that we're just taking it all in. And at the same time, we haven't really had a moment to sit down and say, hey, by the way, do you have a different goal than what I have? Do you have like a totally new vision of something that I'm not even part of or that I'm not aware of? Yeah. Because for the most part, we're pretty much bang on. It's we do have sit downs. We have date nights every Thursday. And those date nights are when we sit together and we chat about what's going on with the business. If we want to grow, how are we going to do that? Are we going to implement physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners only? And also, you know, where we want to go with traveling. And a lot of it is based on the benefits of connection. So what we're focused on right now is just connecting with multiple people in the industry. But at the same time, we've yet to really sit down and have a, you know, see if we are on different pages with our goals, actually, to be honest. I'm not sure.
Well, I was looking back at, I mean, it's also a useful idea to know that everyone has goals. It's just that they don't always know themselves. So I know quite commonly in aesthetics, there's a stress with a risk from a new business is risky. And then one partner is more certainty driven and they end up arguing over the risk basically. And that one has a goal to create something that's very safe and the other one has a goal to grow something. And the two are pulled apart. So, but sometimes you can then make different decisions that meet your partner's goals along the way. It just helps me enormously to realize, I mean, we, to be honest, Miranda and I were very much like you guys were for the first, maybe even 10 years, but it's basically since Miranda had this whole Tony Robbins type breakthrough and falling in love with mindset and then getting behind all the marketing that she now has some really big goals within. And in fact, she's just achieved one recently. This won't go out before we know, but she's been invited to speak at ClickFunnels for 7,000 people. That was a goal she set 3 years ago. And she's got a great video of it, which is amazing. But it's actually not in direct alignment with what our business needs. But I know she's going to get some amazing sort of transformation in that process that we'll have to find a use for somewhere. Or she may grow in a different direction. But it's just very helpful to know that we have to be a partnership. You have to find a way of meeting each other's goals along the way to meet your goals. And if you're in alignment at this stage, it's amazing. And as I said, I had probably close to a decade of it being just like that. But I think just to think about that with whoever's listening, you know, when you fight with your partner about your business, it's probably as simple as just having a different goal that you haven't articulated. And when you feel great and you're growing together, it's because you have the same goals, which it sounds like what you're in right now.
Yeah, I think the only thing that we have a little bit of conflicting issues on is for, I understand that we need to grow and that our business, our actual in-clinic business, where if it was up to me, I probably would have had more people on board by now. But Michelle is very methodical, meticulous, and she's very cautious about who she wants to bring in. And I have to respect that. So this is where we slightly differ. And whenever we have an interview with someone, yes, we get the emotion, we get the feeling, but at the same time, we have to make sure that this person's going to, you know, reflect our business. Michelle's background was, she used to be a hairstylist. And then after that, she was a rep for Aveda, which is a high-end skin and hair product line. And her job was basically at that time, kind of going to different spas and letting know where they could be potentially growing or, you know, cutting back on to help their business thrive. And people knew that, you know, whenever I was getting into medical aesthetics, they knew of Michelle in the auto region. They said, you know, you guys should like have this power couple. You'd be amazing because she was also, Ottawa is a very bilingual town. She's fluently bilingual and she's very meticulous. She's proper. She's everything you would hope in a partner for, you know, obviously a relationship partner, but also as a business partner. And we just made that grow. And it is the glue. And it's the reason why our business is so successful because of all these little things that have come together. Now it's trying to figure out how to grow together. Yeah. So it's a fun stage.
I've got a really useful thing, which I'm also using with my staff is this idea. I'm sure you've heard of it, but there's like a zone of genius. There's something that you're really, really good at or that Michelle's really, really good at that and in amongst all the things that she's also capable of and good at, there's one thing that she's an actual, basically hard to beat. And if you can, that becomes, the goal becomes to make that 80% of your time instead of 20% of time. Because mostly in a small business, you're spread quite thinly and you're doing lots of things that are not in your zone of genius that you're capable of doing. But if you just think about what would be possible if you could If you can do that zone of genius thing 80% of the time, it usually is a trigger for a new wealth of growth. But most importantly is it makes you happy along the way because you actually like doing these things versus all the things you have to do to keep a business going. And I'm trying to use that also in my team to try and get people to maximize their potential, do the most of the thing that they love and that they're good at rather than all the other stuff that we have to do. And it's also an incentive to let go of stuff because there is uncertainty when you hire someone, but there's no way around that. But you need an incentive, which is you get to do more of stuff you love, even if that's non-work related. It could be more kind of home stuff, but whatever it is, I find it's a useful way of thinking about change.
That's a good approach. I like it.
Okay, alignment of goals. I think we touched on a huge amount. Have you got any goals, sort of intermediate goals or objectives that you're trying to achieve now that you think are, because this is the other great strategic way of thinking, is that if you want to achieve a goal of becoming the face of Canada, there will be objectives along the way. Have you got any of those sorts of things in train that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
My new objective is just to make more connections with people, key opinion leaders in the industry, right? So to compare it to whenever I first started with medical aesthetics, my whole goal was to be omnipresent. So how did I do that? I knew that I've got to get a YouTube channel on there because not many people are doing it, or if they're doing it, not too many people are doing it well, and I could do it in my own spin. So that was unique. As a result, multiple things ended up happening. So I understand that in any business or any industry or just in nature and life, it's always good to connect with people. It's always good to put yourself out there and just, you know, say hi, make connections, have a conversation, almost be the politician, right? So this is where my next goal is. And that's whenever I reached out to you last year you were the first person I ever asked to do an IG Live. And I was super happy and grateful that you did that because it opened doors for me where I could now open up and ask other people. And as a result, that's what I've been doing. So I've been trying to really connect with key opinion leaders and not only just, do an Instagram Live with them, but also try and connect with them whenever I get to go to these conferences internationally. Or if I go travel, I would like to see if I can make some type of connection with them personally. Because again, it's one of those things where I don't know what's going to happen in the future out of this, but I always know it's just something positive and it's a good idea to do that. And it's challenging. So, you know, anything that's kind of like fear-driven or anything that's telling me, ooh, this is going to be, it's going to take some nerves to do this, that means I better do it because it is motivating me to just step out of my comfort zone and it's pushing me to do bigger and better things. So that's my next goal right now, is just to make all these connections and hopefully something happens in the future. Not sure what though.
I love that because that is quite a scary thing. I think you're better at it than I am actually, but now I'm outsourcing it to Layla. but it's really good to think about that big goal and then the challenge, and then you know you're on the path, because there is that question of if you really want to, you know, achieve your goal, you're going to have to be known by everyone basically, so because you've got a global goal, so it's in perfect alignment. And then when you get those successes, and even if you get a knockback, it doesn't matter, but when you get the success, then you know you're on that path, which is I think that's what it's all about. So really fantastic insights with that, Dan, and I'm really going to enjoy, because I've always seen how fast you're growing. From the outside it always looks faster, I understand that. On the inside it doesn't feel that way all the time, but the progress and is going to be exciting to see, and I look forward to seeing you do that over the many years to come. And and it's great to be a small part of that journey actually, because the other thing you get by admitting your goals, And this is another brave act, actually, is to tell people what your goal is. Firstly, it makes it more real, but also you get people who get on board with you who want that to happen. So that's also, I think, another unintended, maybe an intended benefit of just having great goals and sharing them with everyone and going for it, which is a wonderful message for everyone, I think.
I appreciate that. I think, you know, that mindset is, you know, it's everything Miranda's saying. The mindset is everything. One thing that I've never yet to... I've yet to say, but this is something that's always in the back of my mind whenever I'm looking at that mindset, is whenever I used to play competitively, you get in these little zones where you're like, how can you get into this zone? The zone is this place where you flow. It's like a state of flow where you're just doing everything naturally and at your peak. And you can only get there if you have full confidence in yourself and you feel that you're attacking this every shot with everything you've got. And that sounds like it's pretty easy to do, but a lot of times whenever you're playing, often enough, you're playing not to lose. And there's like this key thing that a lot of people talk about in sports where there's a difference between going in it to win it. Like you're literally going in and you know that you're going to win and you're going to do everything to win everything. And then there's also the other aspect where you know you're that just as good, just as capable, but you're going to do everything not to lose. And even though it sounds like you're getting the same outcome, it really isn't. If you can have an approach where you know that you are going to succeed based on giving everything you have, then you will get there and you'll have a better chance of getting there. And you have a better chance of closing and setting these targets and hitting your targets instead of just coming out short slightly. You can do everything right, but if you're never really going to close it in the end, then that's going to hinder your confidence. So for me, having this super positive mindset, but doing it in a way where, you know, I'm setting things in place to get me there, that for me is the secret.
Perfect. Yeah, I was just thinking about my 10-year-old and his chess, and he quite often plays not to lose, or maybe to take all the pieces, but he's not that close. The close is to go after the king and try and, you know, actually checkmate it. So that's it's another very useful thing to think about. And it's also that whole, the psychology of a towards motivator versus a way motivator, and towards motivators are much better. They're much more powerful to be moving towards something than rather than away from it. So really fantastic advice, really fantastic talking to you, and hopefully we'll do it again. Remind everyone one more time where they can follow you, connect with you.
Sure. So I'm at Dan Aesthetics Medical, and those are all my handles for everything. So if it's YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and also now that I have a Patreon, you can also go there. And yeah, if you're looking to get tips and advice on how I do things, go check it out there.
Great. Thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks, Tim. Okay. Take care, buddy.
See you later. Bye. The winner of our podcast competition is Nurse KB from Bachar Beauty. Nurse KB, look out for a message from me in your Instagram inbox over the next few days. We had so many great entries, and I'll be reaching out to some more of you via DM for another opportunity. But I'm really looking forward to talking to Nurse KB. So many interesting ideas to discuss, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.